Firstly, can you tell us a little bit about CTE?
Sure. So we've actually known about CTE since about 1928. That was the first description of the punch drunk syndrome in boxers. And it was fairly well accepted back then that if you're a boxer and had a lot of hits to the head, that you'd end up at some later stage getting some sort of neurodegenerative disease. It wasn't actually called CTE or chronic traumatic encephalopathy until about the 1950s when it started to be studied a little bit more. What's been interesting in the last 10 or 20 years has now been the recognition that CTE occurs in American football players and some soccer players.
Yeah, right. So ones that are, I guess, prone to a few knocks in the head, you could say. I do remember seeing a movie not too long ago. I forgot the title of it, but it had Will Smith in it. And it was, I guess, based on NFL players and the knocks to their head and the later, traumatic brain kind of injuries they might have later in life. Was that, that's kind of the same idea here?
That's correct, yes. The movie was actually called Concussion.
Oh, that's right.
So it, yes, that was really the start of the awareness of this disease in these retired American football players.
Yeah, right.
I should say we don't really know how common it is, even in the American football players. Certainly a lot of the ones that have reached out and donated their brains to science, in fact the vast majority of them, actually do have signs of CTE when they die.
Yeah, right. I have read that CTE can only be diagnosed through an autopsy. Is that kind of can relate to why we don't know so much about it?
That's correct. The only way to definitively diagnose it is to look at the brain after death. There are now some clinical criteria that have been proposed that may help neurologists and sports physicians diagnose it during life, but at this stage they haven't been validated. So some people have come up and said, well, we think these are probably the telltale signs and symptoms, but at this stage we actually don't know if they're true or not.
Right, so I guess on that line, before brain donations and I guess things like that, how were you studying the effects of CTE?
So I guess I'm a pathologist, so I do a lot of my work by looking at tissue under the microscope. And I think really that's where the CTE stories come from, as in that Will Smith film as well, in that it's the pathologists that have sort of started to say, hang on, there's some weird brain disease here that we're not used to seeing. And so the Sports Brain Bank at this stage is very much focused on trying to get ex-sports players, either amateur or professional, as well as people that are just interested in this process that haven't played sport, to pledge to donate their brains after death. And we're working with the Concussion Legacy Foundation and Boston University in the USA to create a large cohort of not only of donated brains, but of people that are happy to undergo a bit more clinical and psychological investigation during life. And once we have the clinical and psychological data married up with the changes we see down the microscope, then we should be able to definitively have a clinical test for CTE.
Yeah, wow, it sounds like quite a thorough and a worldly approach to trying to find out more about this, brain disease in a way. What are some of the steps sporting bodies can take to minimise the risk of repeated concussions and potentially CTE?
So the link between concussion and CTE is, some would say, is fairly strong. There are some people, particularly some people that may be associated with sporting bodies that say the link between concussion and CTE is not so strong.
Right.
I actually think we've already seen a response from the sporting bodies. I'm not a sports fanatic, but I have noticed that over the last 5 or 10 years that there have been quite significant concussion rules introduced into the NRL and the AFL. And people are now taken out of play if they do have a concussion. So I think we're already starting to see a response. I wonder if those rules need to be tightened up a bit and enforced a bit more. I suspect that's what we need to do. And I think the other question is, what about the kids? You know, what about the young soccer players that are heading the ball, the young footy players? There is some evidence to suggest that there is a window of vulnerability in the developing brain, and maybe we should be limiting head knocks in the younger age groups and wait till they get older before they really get into the hard-hitting games.
Yeah, it sounds like something that could potentially be a good idea, because I remember when I played rugby for school, which wasn't long ago at all, only about 3 years ago, I wore headgear, but a lot of other people didn't wear headgear, so that could be, you know, potentially something that becomes maybe compulsory or something like that. But I'm sure there's lots of other ways that we'll be able to find ways.
The headgear's a little bit controversial. Some people say it doesn't help at all, whereas others say it does. Look, I know in the USA, the USA Soccer League now has banned heading in their soccer games for children 10 years and under.
Oh, wow.
So there's actually some significant rule changes happening there to try and avoid this sort of the developing brain taking too many knocks.
Yeah. So I guess back to the brain bank, what does the Sports Brain Bank hope to find in the end?
We have a couple of objectives. One is actually a very simple objective, which is really, let's start to define CTE in an Australian population. To date, the only person that has had a diagnosis of CTE has been an ex-rugby union player whose family organised for his brain to be flown on ice to Boston for examination after he died.
Wow.
And he had very severe CTE. That's the only Australian person so far that has been diagnosed with CTE. So what our first objective is actually to say, well, actually, it's here in an Australian exporting population. I think just getting one or two runs on the board like that would actually make the codes sit up and take notice a bit more, that it's a real issue. Longer term, working with our American colleagues and hopefully also some colleagues in Brazil and England, we hope to have an international study of risk factors. There may well be some genetic predisposition to developing this. We certainly know that not everyone develops this, so there's something different about different people, as well as looking at ways of diagnosing it during life, which will then lead to ways to treat it during life.
Yeah, right. I'm sure that would start the conversation over here in Australia, I'm sure a lot more thoroughly amongst the sporting community. And I guess finally, if a person does choose to donate their brain, whether they be, you know, professional or amateur, how can they donate their brain?
Look, it's very simple. You just got to head online, and it's brainbank.org.au. So there's brainbank.org.au, and there's all the instructions about how to sign up to pledge your brain. Once you've signed up there, you'll receive a consent pack in the mail, and it's a matter of just filling out the consent, and then you'll be registered.